Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 266th edition of your economic forum entitled Money Matters. Today's show is entitled The Rebound. Before we begin, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge. This station, its staff members, or underwriters. So we look at the storm out, right? There's two storms coming on today. So I'll ask you, do you look at the storm today and the weather as a bad thing, right? Well, might be inconvenient, power might go out. But in reality, you know that we need the water and these things have to happen. So we look at today's storm in the Dow. Now, if you remember 2 weeks back, we talked about big resistance points and little resistance points, and we mentioned what we call a double bottom. So let's talk about the resistance points first. Dow is sitting at 24,596 as we speak, 12:10:03 p.m., year of our Lord, Thursday, March 1st. 2018. 24,596. Got a high, all-time high of 26,616 and a low of zero when it started. I don't know if it ever really hit zero. Down 432. So these big numbers, 24,000 below us is a support level, 25,000 above us is a resistance level, and the technicians believe that there are minor resistance and support levels all through. So the Dow, obviously, about a month ago or so, ferociously sold off and sold off across a fairly wide variety of assets. We saw some softness in fixed income as well as stocks. And it manifested in a Friday where it was down 300 and then shot up 300 somewhere in there. And I mentioned that might be something like a climax bottom. There are things in this markets, in the chart analysis, called climax tops and climax bottoms. A theory. Okay, nothing is for sure in markets and predicting where they're going to go. So on that Friday, down it had been hit hard, a couple of thousand points, to about 10%. And it was down 300 on Friday, which was not going to be a good sign if it closed down on a Friday. And then it turned around and rocketed up 300. And I mentioned, it looks maybe like a climax bottom. Climax bottom or climax top is when the stocks run up, 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 or run down, 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 and then they bounce violently and bounce up and down and up and down toward the end of whatever they're going to do. And if they're going in the upward direction, they bounce up and down and up and down. It could be an indication of a change in direction, which could be down. And on that Friday, it bounced down 300 and up 300, and I mentioned that could be an indication it was going to reverse course and go up because it was indicating a climax bottom. And it indeed did go up. 23,500 went up a couple of thousand points, 25-something, and it never did get back to the old high. And mentioned something at double bottom. Now, on the charts, analysis technicians can sometimes call something called a double bottom. Just like they can call a double top. We also have a triple bottom and a triple top. What that means is that once it rebounds off its low, if it's a bottom, scoots up fast, and indeed the rebound was rather remarkable. I mean, it kept going and going, and now it's retracing fairly significant. Yesterday was down. Day before, down. It had put in a pretty good run there, and now it's retracing. And so is this a double bottom? Am I worried? Well, first of all, I have to preface that by saying I can't tell you which way markets are going to go. But I can tell you my opinion. and it is my opinion, and this is not a solicitation nor a recommendation to buy or sell anything. I myself believe that we may be in line for a double bottom, which means it would have 1,000 points more to go. Now, these things are never perfect, right? If it is indeed a double bottom, it may not go all the way down to 23.5 where it was during the last correction. It may go lower, may not go so far. But when you look at the chart in hindsight, you know, months from now, you'll see something like, oh, look, it went up and then it went down, bounced again. So could be a double bottom. So I'm looking at the 23,500 level. It's down another 1,000 points if we get there. And the Dow is down 6-something today. Dow's sitting at 24,646 now. Its low today was 24.4, a high 25.1. So it's been kind of straight down. So could this be a double bottom? I'm not really concerned myself. My opinion only, though. Don't do anything based on what my opinion is. I can be wrong just like the next guy. There was an advisor in my office that was a little concerned. And I said, hey, you know, it looks like it could be a double bottom. I still believe that the earnings look good. And the economy looks fairly decent. Retail sales are pretty good over the holidays. And so I'm really not too concerned. That doesn't mean it can't go to zero. I guess anything can happen. But myself, my opinion is I'm not too concerned. It could be a double bottom coming up. Do you buy stocks here? You know, I can't recommend whether you do or not. I know what we're doing, but I can't say that out on the air. Regulars get a little squirrely. So I'm not too concerned. The sell-off today in the last couple of days is pretty broad-based. You know, there's consumer staple stocks. A couple of them are up. Clorox is up a little bit today. Those are defensive stocks. They can be regarded as defensive stocks. But definitely the Dow is down, and some of the leaders are down. Facebook is down. And Apple is down, and Amazon is down, and some of the other stocks. There are a few up today. Some consumer staple stocks are up. Clorox is up today a little bit. And Procter & Gamble is pretty flat. So there's a Kraft Heinz. Kraft Heinz, let's see what Kraft Heinz is doing today. That's another consumer staple stock. They can be regarded as defensive. And Kraft Heinz is flat today. So it's kind of along with my thinking that consumer staple stocks are defensive. And when the markets run really hot, you can see softness in consumer staples. Gold, you know, gold has kind of been in the doldrums, just kind of sitting around there. Gold is flat today, not down with the rest of the market. And some of the gold stocks are up today. So I think gold's run. People are predicting that gold will run. It has not run yet, and it may never run. But there are some that believe that we are due for a run, but I can't substantiate that at all. So there are some stocks getting hit pretty hard today. You know, Dow was down 600. It's now down 355. We are seeing some violent moves, right? We are seeing some bouncing and flopping around and digesting, you know, this last correction that we saw last month. You know, these things just don't go away. People still get burned and people still get scared. And we take a look at the amount of volatility. I call it the scared index, the VXX. The VXX had a low of around 13, okay? Low at around 13. And pre-adjusted split for this indicator, this is what we call the volatility index. We're going to look back 20 years at the VXX. And the VXX pre-adjusted split had a high of 122,880 to its low. 122,880 was in March of 2009. 122,880, and it hit a low just recently. Okay, the low was 25. Wow, huh? I like that. I don't know how many percent that is. That's a lot, man. So when it hit 25.59, somewhere around January of 2018, when the market was running, now it's spiked up to a high of 55 in the last month and a half, and it's sitting around 45. And during the rebound we saw last week, a couple of weeks ago, it got down to about 39. So the volatility index is still high, but nowhere near what it was at 122,000 in 2019. So we're watching it. You know, I always say I watch the market so you don't have to. And remember, this is not an indication to buy or recommendation to buy or recommendation to sell. I can only observe and give opinion, and that's what I'm doing. So I don't think I'm too concerned, but, you know, there are other analysts. Probably the other half of the world is concerned. So there we go. So we'll keep an eye on this, you know, see what happens today, Thursday. You know, this may end down today. NASDAQ down 73, Russell down 9, which is really not a lot. I mean, Dow's down 1.47%. The Russell 2000 is down 0.62%. So small cap stocks are kind of not getting hit as hard. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, you know, it's a storm, right? So don't get too concerned. Of course, we always have it out. You know, if it drops too much, you're going to have to get out. Like gambling in a poker machine, you need to eventually leave. So last night I went down to the Golden One Center, saw Jeff Dunham, the ventriloquist. What a funny guy he is. A little, you know, a little edgy, definitely, if you had little kids in there. He doesn't really get out and get gross like Andrew Dice Clay or Richard Pryor used to do, or some others. Not gross, but definitely it was, you know, there were some metaphors that were fairly clear along the sexual nature. But a very funny guy. You know, it's funny, though. I went down to Golden One. And the parking was $20, and I went inside, and water was $5. Draft beer, $13. $13. So I put out something on Facebook. What do you guys think we are, New York City? Unbelievable. Holy macro, $13 for a draft beer. No, I don't think so. I did go to the Crab Shack down in Old Town, and, you know, that was fairly reasonable. You know, I got the glass of Chardonnay for $5. Wow, that was a good buy. Right down in Old Town. I mean, this is a tourist trap city, right? I got two small lobster tails for $20. That wasn't bad. They're small. I mean, size of your thumb. But I had king crab there for $34. I didn't have that. But, you know, you go to the Crab Shack, you got to have crab or some sort of shellfish, right? So we'll keep an eye. I'll keep you abreast of what's going on with the Dow. If it moves, it's down 374 now. And so we'll take a look at that. So, yeah, the show is called Rebound because of the recent rebound. Now, of course, we can call it, maybe in my next show, I'll call it the double bottom, right? So we will see. We will see what happens, and we'll keep you abreast today. And so with the market continuing to hit new highs almost daily, almost, not today, investors, of course, are wondering just how high it can go and when we might see another correction. Bingo! We're here. Another correction. Obviously, this market at some point will give back some of what it has gained over the last year and a half, 2 years, and indeed, since 2009, pretty much quadrupled. But we don't know how much it will correct and when it will correct by. Markets never go straight up forever, right? And they never go straight down forever. Although they seem like they will when you're in them. But indeed, since 2009 and in the last year, since Trump got elected, you know, the market definitely went from 17,000 to 26,600, the Dow I'm referencing, of course. There's an old saying, you know, you never try to guess where the markets are going to go because markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay liquid. That basically, that means that markets can do something for a long time where you think something other is way overdue and it doesn't happen. So that's to say a market direction, the future direction, is an enigma to all with no exceptions. Nobody can tell you where it's going to go. There are people that are better at telling you where markets can go, but nobody can come out and say, bet the farm, this is where it's going to go. Markets can stay flat for longer than you think. They can rise for longer than you think. They can fall longer and deeper than you think. And by how much is anyone's guess? Rule out nothing, and you'll be less surprised when crazy trends continue farther than expected. No one can say what markets will do and when they will do it. But like the proverbial approaching train, something is going to happen at some point, right? A stopwatch is right, eventually, twice a day. And we can comfortably say that whatever happens in the future, there will be periods which will be unpleasant for the mom and pop investor and indeed institutional investors. And there will be times when it is unpleasant for everyone involved. And there will be a time when it is very pleasant for everyone, right? Last year, everybody was saying, you got to get in the market. It's going straight up. Well, welcome to the party, pal, as Bruce Willis said in one of his movies, Die Hard. Although preparing for the uncertainty is difficult, certainly difficult, uncertainty is preparing for that is certainly difficult. There are ones things can do to at least prepare for what most agree is bound to happen at some point, and that is an unwelcome correction to the downside and maybe a severe one. For those investors finding their nerves tested now or in the last setback or in 2009, you're finding it a little nerve-wracking on crashes or nerve-wracking on markets that unrelentlessly go up, and you're looking at gains and not wanting to see those gains disappear, the usual steps that everybody would agree on is lightening up on stocks and moving a higher percentage to cash or cash equivalents, right? Cash doesn't move, right? So if people are nervous, they got gains, you can always move more of your portfolio over to cash, cash equivalents, savings accounts, treasury bills, short-term treasury bills, and that takes some of the volatility out of it. Now, if it goes up, it'll take volatility out of it in the upward direction as well. Taking some gains off the table is prudent, of course, and if markets do correct, at least that portion of your portfolio, which you took off the table, took off the poker table of Wall Street, will remain intact. If markets continue up, however, the remaining holdings, if you only took a portion, went to cash, will likely participate, taking at least some of the regret out of the prudent decision to lighten up and pull some chips off the table. So in other words, if you sell out some stocks because you have some gains and the markets turn and run again, you know, you still have partial participation in it by the remaining holdings that you have. There are areas of investing that may tend to move opposite of markets. Fixed income sometimes moves opposite of markets. You know, they always say, buy stocks and bonds, stocks will go up, bonds will go down, stocks will go down, bonds will go up. That's not necessarily always true. And today it's not holding true. A lot of the fixed income is selling off. Utilities are flat today. We regard those as kind of defensive. And treasuries, I'm sure interest rates are probably a little bit up today. So most people are long the market. Most people do bet on an upward market. And most people say, well, the Dow goes over consistently over a long period of time. I tend to believe that the Dow goes up over a consistently long period of time because that's what inflation does, and stocks are a good proxy for inflation. That's why when we see countries that have horrendous inflation like Zimbabwe, we think it was around 4 quadrillion percent when Gideon Gono was in charge of their central bank, their market was going up $20,000, $30,000 or $20,000 or $30,000% a year. But you're locked into that market. So $20,000 or $30,000% a year in a particular market means you're denominated in that currency. And if it's losing 4 quadrillion percent, you're really not getting far ahead, are you? In fact, you're going way, way back. So there are areas of investing that tend to move opposite of markets. So you have to actually know what those tendencies are. Usually fixed income don't move as much, but in 2009 and 2008 they did. Nothing is certain in the investing arena, which means many areas that are regarded as safe when markets catch a cold can sell off, but are generally believed to be a little bit safer. And cash, of course, doesn't go anywhere. And some asset classes may even rise when the general market sells off. Knowing what rises and falls when other things fall and rise may require the knowledge of a financial professional, but you can learn a lot by going to the internet and gain some investment knowledge yourself and comparing historical data. Historical data is no indication of what will happen in the future, but sometimes it's a good indication of what may happen. This type of education, learning what happens when markets go down and what goes up, they can be learned by reviewing some of the really fine investing resources that are available in print by book, but nowadays everybody gets it off the web, so that's another place to go. Should an investment professional not be used? A lot of people use people like me. They use investment professionals, but if you don't use one and you don't want to spend the time to learn the ins and outs of market dynamics, in other words, I don't want to learn and I don't want to use anybody, that's not ideal. But you could make the simple move of moving a higher percentage of the portfolio into cash. And that will take some of the ups and downs out of play. The more cash you hold, the less the portfolio balances move up and down, obviously, right? Gains are great, and rising markets tend to manufacture them, but keeping those gains is yet another hurdle investors must overcome. Too many investors gain much in the infamously rising tsunamis that were the dot-com and housing boom, only to see those gains evaporate when those markets return to normal by correcting quite horrendously. Bitcoin, crypto. I wrote a lot on crypto. And so, ever since stock markets existed, people have tried to find the holy grail as to predicting what an index will do, what a stock will do, what direction it'll go, and when it'll go there. There are technical analysts who might stare at a chart of price movements, like we mentioned, the resistance points. They might stare at a chart over a particular period of time and draw a conclusion that, hey, this is what will happen in the future based on what it did. Now, there are seasonal tendencies that people go on theories. There's lots of theories in stocks. You know, some people sell programs with computers that say that they can pinpoint when to buy or sell. But there are some famous theories. One is sell stocks in May and go away. Basically, it says sell your stocks in May, come back in November and rebuy them again. And then over the long term, that will yield more gains than not doing that. And that is still a good theory, right? It has failed sometimes and it has been successful sometimes. So really, what kind of theory is that, right? There are presidential cycles. What four-year cycle are we in as far as when presidents get elected? There are the theory that when a new Fed chief is installed, the markets crater. And we had a new Fed chief installed. Janet Yellen is out. Jerome Powell is in. He's regarded as a dove, easy money policies. And he basically came out and said, when he was installed, that he has to be gradual and interest rates rise. Interest rate increases, he has to be gradual. And then he came out and the markets ran. Then he came out and he said, oh, we're going to have four increases in the next year. And the market sold off. And he is speaking again today. And I do believe, I told you I wasn't too concerned about this sell-off. But this could be, I think it's an interest rate sell-off. I think it's an interest rate sell-off that the, you know, the investors are paranoid that the Feds are going to raise rates. The mom-and-pop investors really don't know what that means to the stock market. Some do, but most don't. But the common belief among institutional investors and, quote, the smart money or people that study these things believe that when interest rates rise, the markets will sell off. And not only immediately, but over the long term. And that really does not panned out to be true 100% of the time. When we see gradual interest rates, when interest rates gradually increase, usually the markets will go up because it indicates that the economy is strong. There are other cycles. Who wins the Super Bowl? You know, they say if the NFC wins the Super Bowl, markets will run. If the AFC doesn't wins, if the ANC wins the Super Bowl, the markets go the other way. Then there are so many prognostication techniques. They run from highly technical charts to, you know, Santa Claus rally. You know, Santa Claus rally, people buy stocks coming to Christmas because they feel good, they're in a good mood. And then there's the sell-off right prior to the new year because stock portfolio managers want to get rid of the losers. So when somebody says, well, what does this firm hold in this particular year, they sold off all the losers, so they look bad, and then there's something look good. And then they'll have something called the January effect. The January effect says, so goes the first couple of days in January, stocks will rise because although investors and money managers may have sold stocks to get rid of their losers in late December before the tax year ends, they'll turn around and use that money and buy stocks in January. I did know a woman that used to come to my desk, and she would shake wooden cubes to see if she wanted to buy and sell a security I might recommend. Yeah, really. Talk about depending on chance, right? But she would. She had symbols on there that I didn't understand. But that kind of reminds me of another game called gambling where they use other cubes, right? And there's even a theory based on the length of women's skirts, you know, how long women's skirts go up and down and up and down and up and down over the decades, and there's a theory that depending on the length of the skirt, what the markets will do. So, you know, can you tell which way the market's going to go? Well, then there's something called the inherent value of stocks that, you know, theory says that all stocks are fairly priced at every minute of the day. All stocks are fairly priced at every minute of the day because all information is available to everyone. That's not quite true because there's insider trading, so you might make an exception there. Wall Street Journal gained notoriety for the dartboard test. It said, the dartboard test said, if we get a bunch of monkeys and they throw darts at the Wall Street Journal page where it has all the stock tickers, that you would do just as well than if somebody who picked them. It went along the lines, the monkey with the box of darts throwing them at the journal sticker prices could make more money than most professional managers. Well, the Wall Street Journal, you know, these guys, they actually did the test and they continue to do it. Their employees play the monkeys and they hurl the darts. The contest has been held about 100 times. And the pros managing versus the monkeys from investorhome.com say that the pros lead from 61 times over 39 over the monkeys. Well, you would think that'd be the case. But the return in percentages are not quite as illustrious as that number may indicate. The difference between the monkeys and the professional money managers is embarrassingly small. So, yeah, it's interesting, and I still think they're doing that test. Santa Claus rally, we mentioned the January effect. They all come in play. And needless to say, if any one of these were foolproof, the word would be out and the House would probably rig the game against such methods. But all these theories, you know, you can use them. Nobody can stop you. Alas, we see no such rules set by the authorities forbidding investors from betting against against the market and betting with or against these theories, or based on theories based on such silliness, which tell us none of these theories might not hold much water. Perhaps some statistics might lean one way or another, whether maybe it leans to the January effect or the Santa Claus rally one way or another, or the sell in May or go away, but statistically different, you can always find exceptions, of course. There are charlatans out there that would say that they can sell you a computer program that you plug into your computer and it would give you little indicators to buy and sell. But really, you know, the market is only the sum of all the players in it, of all the millions of players, and it's a sociology degree that you get when you study economics, not a Bachelor of Science, because it's sociology. Markets will reflect reality eventually, but their day-to-day movements are only the perceptions of all the players in it today. So, is the economy strong? It could be, but the Dow's down 443 today because the more investors are pushing the sell button than they are pushing the buy button. Stock markets and the study of is a study in human sociology, not of science or math. Science and math have definite rules, right? Truths, right? 2 and 2 is 4. Or science, you know, you get water at a certain temperature, at a certain atmospheric pressure, which means a certain altitude, and it boils. 212 at sea level, and you know, you go up in Tahoe and it boils a little faster, but it doesn't boil faster. It boils faster as far as time and the heat you've applied to it, but it boils at a lower temperature, which sometimes means that you have to cook things a little longer at a higher temperature, at a higher altitude. The movement of the markets is just the sum of all the beliefs of millions of investors in it at any one time. And that, my friend, is sociology, not science. You tell me what 100 millions of people will do at any given day in the market as a whole, and the stock market will be your oyster. But then again, that's not quite possible, is it? You're listening to Money Matters Show 266, called The Rebound. With no today, Dow down 43. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. My name's Mark. So out on MT Newswires, you know, everybody has a theory on why things are selling off today. MT Newswires, published at 1.54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, said stocks continue to lose ground on Thursday today following comments from New York Fed President William Dudley. No, he's not the chief. And an announcement from President Trump regarding trade restrictions on imported metals that risk triggering a trade war between U.S. and China. So Trump said, well, we may put some trade restrictions or tariffs on imported metals, and that makes, you know, the theory is China will get mad and do the same to our exports, and then our companies won't sell as much. And Fed Chairman Jerome Powell raised the possibility of 4 rate hikes this year. Dudley sent equity prices spiraling lower, so says MT Newswires. Jerome did say that the 4 rates hikes is likely to be still gradual. The metal tariffs are going to be imposed, President Trump said he will impose steel and aluminum tariffs on imports next week. The metal sector surged because obviously you're knocking down the supply if you ostracize the China imports on the metals. and trade war. So, you know, we've got two things that are possibly moving this market. The thought of this, the threat of interest rate increases by the Federal Reserve and the trade war. And so, you know, there's so many moving pieces to the market, so many moving pieces. What may seem logical to you may not be how the market reacts, because this is a study of sociology. It's an incredible science, you know, which is not a science. It's why I studied it. You know, I was given a book at 14 called You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation of the Dollar, if I believe I got that right, by Harry Brown. And I really didn't like reading very much, but I read that book and I just couldn't put it down. I just loved it. I bought my first stock, Phillips Petroleum, when I was a teenager to my dad. And so, you know, I studied it because I just really liked the study of money and how people react. And the more I studied it, the more they taught me about economics, the more I was fascinated about it. You know, it's just like, wow, this is really interesting how people react. And some of the things that you know, are interesting and basic. There's so many facets. That's when I did the show. I petitioned to do the show to this station. There was no lack of material. None. There's never a lack of material. I was doing four newscasts a week for a long time, and there was never a lack of material. All I do is open up newspaper. We've branched off a little bit with Investing in Community, where we cover nonprofits, organizations, and events that are happening around our area here, and because I believe that not only is investing in money, but it's also investing in your body, investing in your garden, investing in your house, painting your house, investing in your car, investing in your mind, learning things, maybe learning other languages. So there's a lot to investing that doesn't have to have money. I guess if you looked up the definition of investing, it might always circumvent around you know, the globe of money and monetary and financial investigation. But I broaden it out a lot, you know. Some people come to me and say, I don't listen to the show, I don't have any money. But that's why I say in the beginning of the show, you know, Money Matters is about money. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it moves the world that you're in. And, you know, you got to pay attention, because what happens in Wall Street will eventually bleed down to you, good or bad. And so, you know, that's what Money Matters is about. And that's why I elected to do this show. For instance, you know, there's some standard economic theories that hold that people who even run small business should realize, and I'm surprised that they don't know. You know, there are more technical things they should know that will burn a lot of people, called malinvestment in easy money policies. But instead of going to that, let's just talk about price. You know, we have a price chart in economics. The lower the price, the more you sell. The lower the price, the more you sell. And then there's a sweet spot. Is you raise your price too much, you don't sell anything in your store. Or if you're a masseuse, you don't sell as many masseuses. If you drop it too low, well, you're not going to make enough profit. So there's a sweet spot. It's called a price point. And where you set your price point is, there is an optimum price point. There is an optimum price for your service or your good that you're selling that will yield the most profit. Just like Laffer's curve says that there's an optimum tax rate. You know, if the government doesn't tax at all, the government makes no tax money. If the government taxes too much, it will make less tax receipts. The Laffer curve. There it is. And so there is an optimum tax rate. Where you think that is where the debate is. That's why it's sociology. But you could actually do an experiment, and you could have a very commodity-based item, like something that has no quality comparison to it, but it's just something. Let's say a well-made screwdriver, okay? A well-made screwdriver. And you have a store and you put out the same screwdriver in the store, put on 1,000 screwdrivers. And you have a lot of people coming in your store. And for a year, what you do is you start high and go all the way to low. And you see where you made the most profit, not where you sold the most screwdrivers, because it may be more profitable for you to sell less screwdrivers at a higher markup. But there will be a point where you'll find out that at a certain price, you will sell the most, you will sell not necessarily the most screwdrivers, but you will make the most money. The optimum price point. And it's amazing to me. People who are running stores, who are selling things or services, whatever you do, there is an optimum price point, but nobody searches for it. You know, or very few people search for it. They don't understand that there is an optimum price point. Somebody says, well, this, you know, this Shaw that I made. Shaw? What is that called? Shaw? Something goes around your neck. What's that called? I don't know, shawl. There you go. Yeah, a netted shawl. There's an optimum price point for that. And some people let their ego go in the way. I'm not selling my shawl for under $40. Why? Well, it's worth that. But you may make more money selling more of them at $35. Or you may make more money selling fewer of them at $50. So there's a price point, and they a lot of times will let their emotion come into play on that. You know, I do want to cover malinvestment. I've covered that many times on the show, and we'll do that at another point. Malinvestment is extremely interesting, and it's an extremely important thing for you to know, because it has to do with expansion in a increasing money supply or an inflationary environment. You know, do you expand in an inflationary environment, you get a bigger store. And I always have some sayings. You know, I've counseled small businesses on how to run businesses, and I've had classes on how to be a good salesman, you know. And one of the things that I've done in how to run a small business is find your price point. Find your price point. And some of the common misconceptions, and probably, you know, I've done a couple shows on how to run a small business. And some of the, you know, concerns that you have in a business is never expand into weakness. Build on strength. Now, what does that mean? You know, and it goes along with let sales drive growth, not growth drive sales. So, in other words, for a long time I did this show. I didn't have a website. And I didn't have a website because of the cost of the website. But people kept coming to me saying, you know, you got to have a website. You're going to get bigger and bigger, you got to have a website. So in that particular case, the demand, I had to make a website to be official, okay? But let's say you're running a store. And I know people that do this. They have a store, and they're not selling enough, so they expand. So they've expanded into the weakness of their sales. So now that they've expanded, they have a higher overhead, more inventory. And now their sales have to pay for the growth. Their sales have to pay for the growth. Their sales have to pay for the higher rent. Their sales have to pay for more inventory. So they've expanded into weakness. Okay? Now, common sense would say you contract into weakness. You get smaller. Versus letting growth drive expansion. So let's say you have a store and you're selling the heck out of everything, and you just don't have enough room for all the inventory, and there's not enough room for the thousands of people that are coming in your store. Well, then you expand because the sales are forcing you to grow. That's what you want. You want the sales to force you to grow. I have to grow. The store is jammed versus the store is empty. Let's get a bigger store, right? So this is very common. You know, concept that a lot of people miss. You know, it's the reason why 9 out of 10 businesses, they don't survive into the third year. They just don't survive. 9 out of 10. Because of so many mistakes that people make that open up these businesses. Just rampant mistakes. The other is sometimes people open up a coffee house. We had a lot of coffee houses come and go here. And one of them was down on Main Street where Sergio's was. And it was a Buddha coffee house or something like that. And you went in and they had a big old store and they started selling coffee, and they weren't selling enough, so then they started selling sweet rolls, and they started selling donuts. They were expanding into strength. They were also getting off their core business. In other words, you know, if your core business is selling clothes, you know, some people say, well, now, you know, the clothes aren't doing so well, so now I'll open up a coffee inside my store. Or maybe I'm selling clothes, and now I'll offer insurance, or I'll offer auto parts. Well, you're expanding into an area that's completely different. Now, that expansion into those other areas may be successful, but if I'm selling a lot of coffee, right, I got a real successful coffee house, then I want to expand into the types of coffee that I'm offering and maybe complementary things that go with coffee. I'm selling so much coffee, hey, maybe I'll sell a sweet roll now. Instead of selling, I'm not selling enough coffee, so I'll sell sweet rolls. See, there's a big difference here. So small businesses, you know, some are very well run, some are very poorly run. You know, if you go into a small business, I've gone into a deli, then the deli didn't have anything in there. You know, they had a few things, one piece of meat and a couple of sandwiches, and that was it. And you walk in and there's nothing there. You know, so if you have too big of a store when you start out and you don't have enough stock, the store looks empty. Or you open up a huge store and you got a lot of stock and you just don't sell anything to support it. So, you know, everybody always says location, location, location. Well, that's true. But, you know, being aware of how economics operates. Price point. Lower your price, sell more items. Raise the price, sell less items. But where's your profit? Where's your price point on profit? I once sat down at our little league here in Grass Valley. And, we had board meetings. And I don't know. I've been on the board of many institutions. And they can be long and drawn out. Everybody's got to put their 2 cents in. Nobody ever goes to a board meeting and says, hey, let's do this. Everybody votes yes. No. It's always got to be somebody that's got to argue. So we sat, I think, for an hour and a half deciding whether to raise the fee $5. I mean, an hour and a half talking about whether we charge $149 or $154. What? Or whatever it was. I'm like, dudes, we're guessing. We're not even looking for a price point. We're just guessing to see what feels better, you know? I mean, I was in for raising it $5, you know? But, you know, hour and a half of, you know, we charge $249 or $254. It's like, dudes, come on, you know? And I'd speak up and they'd say, well, you don't know anything about, you know, whatever. And I'd say, hey, look, man, I study markets. I'm an economist. I know what price point is. Another misnomer in let's say in salesmanship, I used to teach salesmen how to sell, you know. I've had a couple of, you know, people always listen to propaganda, and the propaganda always says, you know, develop a mantra and repeat it over and over and over. Develop an easy phrase and repeat it, like tax the rich, you know, corporations are not people, or whatever you thing you believe in, you know, you develop these sayings, or these one-word mantras, and repeat them over and over again. So I've developed quite a bit. You know, I've always said for salesmen, you know, I would say, return your phone calls quickly, or you won't have any phone calls to return. And I tell you, I've talked to many people all around town and through businesses in my whole life, and you call them and they don't return your phone call. You know, I look at some of these huge industrial companies, because I read a lot of industrial magazines, and you have somebody like Acme Motors. I don't know if there's an Acme Motors, but this is not. If there is, this is not about you. Let's say it's Acme Cunaberdy Motors, okay? They run these huge ads in these trade magazines. Full page. Call us. Send us an email. And I've learned over the years, and I've done sample tests where I've sent 10 emails out to these big companies, and literally nobody, 10-20% call me back or answer the email. And other than that, you never hear back. Try sending an email to General Electric, their general website, and see if anybody calls you. I'm not saying they will or they won't, but the companies that I did, and I've done it year in, year in, and year out, kind of joke in my family, send out an email, these guys spent the money for the ad, they don't call you back. Why spend the money for the ad? Really? Or they say, you call a company and they say, well, they're in a meeting, they'll call you back. Well, you know, you have to go after the active sales, the active interest, right? The most active interest in your product is somebody that's in the store. Or the most active interest in your product with the highest percentage of sale is the guy that's calling on the phone. Yet, you got 10 people in a meeting on figuring out how to sell more to the wide population. Yet you've got a guy who's actually called you who wants to buy something. He's calling you. That's the highest percentage possibility of making a sale. And they tell him he's in a meeting. What's the meeting about? How to sell more? Well, I'm on the phone. Well, they'll call you back. What? I mean, crazy. I think it's a direct correlation. The more meetings a company has, the less profitable they are. You know, and the higher the college degree, the more terrible they are as a business person, you know. I mean, that's what I found. And I called so many people, they just don't call you back. It's crazy. You know, we were doing investing in this community where we were offering these promotional videos. You know, we'll video your company, blah, blah, blah. We weren't charging anything for it. It was your community service, local newspaper, local radio station websites. I'd say, hey, you know, you need to sell tickets for this certain event. Let me do a promo film. They never call you back. And I'd call 3 times. Hey, we'll do this promo film for you for free. It won't cost you anything. They never call you back. It's like, what? Somebody calls me from my business and says, we're going to do a free promo film for you and put it out for you. I'd say, sure. And I'll pay you for it anyway, you know. So it's just amazing to me, the stupidity of some people that are running businesses. And it's just amazing, you know. The meeting thing is great. He's in a meeting. It's like, I'm calling, you know. The other thing is, I used to tell salesmen, there's a bell curve, right? There's a bell curve. There's a, the left of the curve is the terrible people that stink, and to the right of the curve, people that are great, right? Just great. And there's a direct correlation in sales, in my opinion, that the faster you return a phone call, the more sales you make, right? You don't return a phone call for a week or a month, you're not going to make any sales. If you return a phone call in 5 minutes, that's good service. That's where you want to be. But you call, people are selling something, they don't call you back for a day. It's like, well, where are you on the bell curve? Are you average? And being successful in business is a comparative, a business. It's a comparative function, performance. In other words, if you're better than the next guy in returning calls, answering questions, you're going to sell more. So with me, I stop getting upset on people that don't call me back. Because if they're competitors, I'm like, good. I'm glad you didn't call me back because you're my competition. Because I do buy stuff from competitors. You know, we all do. We buy whatever from guys that sell the same thing you are. And he doesn't call me back. And I'm saying, I used to get mad. I say, damn, darn him. He didn't call me back. But, you know, they now I'm like, I'm good. I'm glad he didn't call you back. I tell you, you open up a service industry and you call everybody back immediately, you're automatically going to be on the left-hand side of the bell curve. Automatically. So just some things to think about. Dow is down 366. We've got a couple of minutes before it closes. And so kind of got off topic here, but I will do a show on small business, how to run a small business. I did a show on how to run a restaurant, although I've never run a restaurant. I've been in plenty of them, and it was a I thought it was a great show. So maybe I'll resurrect those shows just for fun. If you've got an idea that you would like me to cover, send me an email at moneymatters@kvmr.org, moneymatters@kvmr.org. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com. That's a free website. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to community radio station. The shows are up there. Some newscasts, there's articles you can get on the newsletter. It's all free. It's just our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And you might want to consider contacting your community radio station for your support volunteer so you can help them out, because community radio station means community. And here, of course, our website. Just Google up the station that you're listening to the show on. This website here, the originating station is kvmr.org. But if you want to send me an email, you can send it through the website, or you can send it to the program director at wherever you're hearing the show. The show is carried on about 60 other stations throughout the state at various times in the newscast, so I'd be glad to hear from you. I'm always looking for new topics, always looking for new topics. Somebody suggested I do something on reverse mortgages 5-10 years ago, and I did it, and it was a great show. I did one on timeshares. That was fun. So, yeah, it was a great show. This has been show 266 called Rebound, and it's been my pleasure to bring this to you, and I hope it's kept you at the radio station dial and you haven't turned this off. And there's plenty of more fine programming on every community radio station. They're in business, they're on the air, because they do provide fine programming, alternative views and alternative music. So definitely consider reaching out to them. And don't forget that, as always, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff members, or underwriters. Again, our website, moneymanagementradio.com. Send me an email. Give me some topic ideas. I've got a lot, but I'm always looking for more. Thanks a lot. God bless. Stay tuned for more fine programming on your community radio station. You are the you in community, so make sure you're part of the plan. God bless. Have a great day.